today I have with me Alex Paulos, and he is a personality expert, and I can't wait for you to hear our conversation. I am so excited about what he does because he really has a gift. He has cracked the code into providing genetically based personality assessments. Yes, genetics. You have your personality that is just innately you, and he can look at you. He can recognize facial characteristics and mannerisms that are innate within you. So he has this intuitive system of understanding people and the facades they seek to hide behind, which means if you aren't showing up as yourself, he can tell. He helps you discover your inborn personality. So his company's mission is to help an individual make the transformation from who she or he thinks she or he is to recognize who you really are by guiding you to a correct self-concept and helping you to transcend and be a more balanced, happy, and fulfilled person. Basically, you have to be your authentic self to truly navigate in the world as the happiest human. And a lot of us are masquerading as somebody else because we're trying to please other people, or because our environment has forced us to be a certain way, or our jobs have maybe made us have to do things a certain way that opposes our innate personality. Therefore, we adapt and it makes us unhappy. It's crazy. It's a crazy thing that he does. And like I said, when I first started this intro, I believe he has a true gift. He was born with this gift, and he talks about his story and how he came to kind of figure it out, like a lot of us. Although he was a little bit younger, he was in college, not like me when I was close to 60 when I finally figured it out. But he figured it out earlier, but it was because he was taking courses, doing things that just weren't lighting him up. And so he kind of followed that feeling of what was lighting him up. And a roommate introduced him to personality books, and he just dug them and soaked them up. And then he actually learned something and learned a whole new way of typing people. And you can actually go to his website. We'll give you the information. It's in the show notes, and you can get typed. That's what I did. I heard him on a podcast, and I immediately contacted him. So I'm super excited to bring him to my podcast and introduce him to all of my listeners. So let's get to the episode now, and you can meet Alex and hear all about what he does. Hi, I'm Laurie Wright, also known as Not Your Average Grandma. I created this podcast as a place to go for midlife inspiration. If you are in a stage where you believe the best is behind you, it is my hope that one of these episodes will ignite a long suppressed or unrealized desire, and you will see the potential within yourself just waiting to be tapped so you can do amazing things with the time you have left. I want you to stop seeing your age as a limitation and start seeing it as your superpower. You have years of experience and value that a younger you never had, so it's time to lean into that and use it to fuel your future. No more letting age hold you back from the pursuit of a more passion-filled life. The more passionate we are, the better the world will be. So stop settling for average, put your AirPods in, and let this episode inspire you to take the first step in transforming your mind, body, and soul. Welcome to another episode of Not Your Average Lives, and you are in for a treat today because I have a special guest, Alex Paulos. And I first heard about Alex, gosh, it's probably about 2 months ago now, but I heard him on James Wedmore's Mind Your Business podcast, and it just was one of those, I don't know, it was the universe like hit me on the side of the head that like, it was such a powerful episode. And I listened to a lot of episodes, and I never stop the episode and go to the person's website and sign up so I can find out how, more about myself, because that's what Alex does. He types you and tells you really more about yourself than you really even know about yourself. So I did that, and I've since had him, hired him to do a group typing for my students in my second half Spark School. And so they had some really amazing aha moments from that session. And so I have Alex here with me today. I'm super excited that he agreed to come on and talk about what he does and how he helps people really understand more about themselves. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
So we are here, and I just, one of the things that like really stood out to me is like, and what I really am fascinated with is just how the universe calls us to do something, and how you figured this out, that you have figured out you have this gift where you can actually read people. And you, one of the things you said in the podcast that I first heard was, a lot of times when people take personality tests, it's based contextually on like what they're doing at the moment or like the job they have. And also a lot of times their answer might be not really accurate. So it's more like what they think they are versus than what they really are. So I would love you to go into that, and maybe we start there, because that was fascinating to me. And of course I was like, well, I'm an E, I'm an ENFJ. That's what I test at. And I was, is that really what I am? And what am I if I'm not that? And yeah, so it's been really fascinating. It's really been a really fascinating journey to understand more and to know that I was kind of not reading myself correctly. I was somewhat wearing a mask. So I think it'd be best if you just introduce yourself and you talked about how you got interested in what you do and how you figured out you had this gift.
I tell people that I'm an expert people reader, really interested in personality psychology. I ended up getting a master's degree in psychology. So I'm really interested in people, how the mind works and all that. I do coaching, consulting, and am a co-founder of Inner Shift. So how I got into it was through Carl Jung. So he was a Swiss psychoanalyst back in the day, and he wrote a book called Psychological Types. It's a big one, and a lot of it is devoted to kind of fleshing out these different inborn personality traits. Now he's the one that coined the terms introvert and extrovert. I've read probably over 400 books that are on personality, temperament, and things like that. I just really got enamored with what it's all about. And so in one of the books in particular that I got, it was called Please Understand Me Too. So it's the second installment of Please Understand Me by David Kiersey. He has a quiz in the book, and you take it and get a profile. And I was astounded at how well it knew me just based on a series of questions. So I would take around with me these books, and I would ask my friends, are you more this way or that way? And it surprised me when people would give answers to some of the questions. I was like, really, you see yourself as more conscientious than spontaneous? I see you more as the opposite. And I recognized that I'd have to incorporate lie detection techniques, because people who were taking these self-assessment tests, they didn't really know what they were most of the time versus some of the time. They were so contextual, it seems, that they were mistyping themselves. So then I started studying the works of Paul Ekman, and he's a man who's known as the human lie detector. And he studied facial characteristics, and he showed that emotion is universal. So you will use certain facial muscles to do various things like show anger, surprise, and also whether or not you're smiling a real smile or a fake smile. So I thought to myself, wow, if he could figure out if emotions are universal, I want to discover if inborn personality, also known as temperament, is universal, which means that everybody is born with an inborn personality or temperament and they die with it, but you can kind of modify it. So I wanted to figure out if it was something that was solid. And that's what got me started on the journey. So I started to study multiple disciplines. I was studying neuroscience. I began looking into anatomy, everything I get my hands on about personality, temperament, all these things. And so as I was studying, researching, I picked up patterns, and I discovered that there's a high correlation between your genetics and what makes up your inborn personality and your appearance, your movement. And so this is known as the genotype-phenotype connection. The genotype is the genes, it's the DNA, and the phenotype is the physical representation of those genes. So when I discovered that there was a high correlation between the two, I got really excited. I didn't know that it existed. I stumbled upon it in my research.
Before a typing session, you have to submit a couple of pictures and a video of you walking towards and away from the camera. So I thought that was really interesting.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So some people, they have fun with that, and they laugh when they're doing the walk. And then, you know, in their photos, they're supposed to have a straight face and then a smile. And some people do really cheesy smile.
That's frustrating. I mean, gosh. You know, I remember when I did it, and I wanted to be somebody that was like, had a good score or a good whatever that, I didn't even know what that was. But when you submit it, you don't want to hear back that, oh, well, you have a long way to go, and you know, whatever. Yeah. I guess there's no bad thing to be. It's a matter of just being who you are and understanding who you are, right?
There is no bad type, but based on context, some inborn personalities do better than others. And everybody has a personality lineup or a team. You have what I call all-stars and bench warmers. So every all-star has a bench warmer that goes with it. And an all-star is your go-to players, your traits that are very strong. It's like a major trait. And the bench player is like a minor trait or a more recessive trait. So for example, everybody is conscientious and spontaneous, but one side of the coin is going to be stronger than the other. And when you understand even this one thing, whether or not you're naturally more conscientious or spontaneous, you can know really what career you should choose, what language pattern you have, which I call a personality language, an inborn personality language. The dominant or the all-star trait is going to be like swimming downstream. And the recessive minor trait, which is the bench warmer, it's going to be like swimming upstream. So it's harder to do. But when you find out these combinations of traits, it makes up an inborn personality. So you're going to be either more conscientious or spontaneous, linear or nonlinear, objective, subjective, inhibited, uninhibited, introverted, extroverted.
And one of the things that I wanted to touch on, because, you know, it was really fascinating for me to go through the process, but when I took my students into the typing session, it was really interesting to watch them get typed and to see the before and after of their realization. So in a couple of cases, they were really using in their day-to-day life what you call their bench players. So it was almost like they were showing up in the world not as their best self, but as the only self they knew how to navigate as. Is that the best way to describe it?
Yeah.
And so, you know, for me to see that was really eye-opening, and to really understand that I felt like they felt that there was this disconnect. They were struggling to feel understood. They were struggling in some, you know, like finding their way a little bit, like looking for a purpose. It was like this, like, I don't know, the sun came out when they got typed, and they got this validation that, and I think you call it wearing a mask. And so that is, I guess, what, and I'm trying to, for my listeners, describe what like pulling on your bench warmers versus playing your all-stars. It's like, you're not living real authentically when you're, you know, pulling, when you're not going for your like all-stars, right?
Yeah, that's it. People who, for example, have spontaneousness as their all-star, being highly sensitive as an all-star. They will go into the workforce and they'll switch into their bench warmers because they won't feel as powerful. So they'll put in these players that are more tough-minded. They're going to be more conscientious, going to be more objective because it helps them contextually. However, if they keep that up, it leads to falsification of type. And there's a prolonged adaptation that is taking place where their joints will get tighter, their muscles will be much more tight, and they will go in fight or flight a lot. And over time, that really hurts their adrenal glands because the adrenals, they produce adrenaline and they also produce cortisol. So in small amounts, cortisol is good because it helps you to deal with stress, but in large amounts, it poisons your system and it causes all sorts of problems.
And one person specifically, because I'll share that because I witnessed it, she has had serious back problems. And I talked to her a couple of weeks after that typing session, and she said, my back doesn't hurt as much.
That's so
it's like crazy that, you know, she has discovered that it was this negative energy, I guess, a better way to describe it is that she was using all these bench players. Now, Alex, how does that happen? I know in her case, she had a very negative mother and, you know, has a very tense relationship with her mother. And so this kind of like internal relationships with people, can that cause you to pull your bench players more than your team, your all-stars?
Sure, that's what happens almost always. It usually relates to wanting to please a parent, a spouse, partner, friend, and a teacher, just whoever you feel is somebody that you care about, that you care about what they think. So a lot of people, more than you would maybe even know, people will actually use mostly their bench players and do this for years. Like they will, so that they can trade their authenticity for love, so they can feel loved, they can feel secure, they can feel needed. They will behave in the way that their parent, their spouse, their partner, their friend, their teacher wants them to behave. And it's not very often going to fit with who they naturally are, because of course everybody's different. And I tell people, you're unique just like everybody else, right? Mm-hmm. So everybody who has kind of tender-hearted, nonlinear, creative traits, who decides, I want to be an accountant because my dad's an accountant or my mom's an accountant, and I want to be just like them, and I want to be stroked for being just like them. So instead of being an artist or someone who does something creative, I'm going to be highly linear because accountants are supposed to be linear. The debits have to equal the credits. They're not meant to necessarily be that creative unless, of course, they're cooking the books, right? But the accountants are supposed to be linear. The input equals the output. But if you're non-linear, which means you're more creative, those are curves. Those are non-linear things that you do that you'll think outside of the box. You'll do things that are different. You're going to find a new way to do something rather than the same old, same old. So what happens is in these relationships is people will kind of self-sacrifice themselves out of their self, just so that they can have peace, so that they can feel like they're loved. A lot of times when people don't even have the base needs taken care of, they operate from kind of the primal brain and they're surviving. So when you're in survival mode, you're often using your bench players because you're grabbing for straws, figuring out a way to make something happen. And you have to move your way up from the primal brain all the way up to what is known as the neomammalian brain, which is the higher brain, which includes the neocortex. And that's where you can actually do often your best work. But if you're stuck in this fight or flight primal brain, you're just trying to get your needs met any way that you can. And so you'll take a job to make money, even though it doesn't fit with who you really are. So a lot of these needs include significance and variety, certainty, and connection. So these are personality needs that Tony Robbins kind of talks about. And then he says there's two higher needs that are growth and contribution to the greater whole. So he says that you can't really grow and have as much contribution to the greater whole if you don't have those base needs taken care of. If you're able to meet those needs and then have your lifestyle requirements taken care of, then you're able to actually take that inborn personality and thrive with it.
Cool. So one of the things that struck me, and I think you talked about this in the podcast episode I listened to, was that there, and I think you say there's like 32 different types. So there's a lot of different like combinations of types. And I know you talk about like some are described like with the seasons, but you also have these, and you call it linear and nonlinear, I think, but I liked the wavy and pointy, the way you, when I heard it on the podcast episode, and it really helped me understand, because when I was growing up, I was always told I was like my dad, who my dad didn't have any tact, and he was very direct, and he didn't mince words and all that. And so that is like pointy, but, and how pointy people just don't realize sometimes that they're pointy when they're talking to a wavy person, and that a wavy person kind of receives a pointy person as, well, that was rude. And so I thought that was so great to just understand. That's kind of an innate part of me, and to understand that there's these other types. Cause a lot of times I think one of the problems we have is we think everybody's like us, and why didn't they get that? And why did they receive it? And why are they so sensitive? So can you describe kind of the wavy, pointy versus like linear, nonlinear might be a nicer way of saying it.
People who are pointy often are going to get to the point. It's going to sound more harsh because they're going to focus on actuality. People who are waves as their all-stars, they're going to focus on potentiality, freedom, allowing things to play out. And if you are a point who has a partner who's a wave, it's really important to understand how your partner communicates. And then in turn, they would have to understand how you communicate. So point types, they'll often say, what's your schedule like? What are you doing today? Are you coming to my party? So it's very direct. It gets to the point. On the other side of the coin is the wave. And these types will say, want to grab that for me? Maybe you could kind of sort of think about handing it to me, or we might do that. Let's possibly think about it. We might pencil it in and schedule it. So by nature, they're going to be roundabout or nonlinear. They're going to wander. They're going to meander. It's going to be an indirect oblique approach. And it's not like they're trying to be wishy-washy or evade or equivocate. Now, some of them possibly would, but the idea is that they want to wiggle out of the actuality of things because they like the options, the variety, the possibilities. And just learning this about what your all-star is will do wonders, because a lot of times wave types will go into the workforce, and because it's run on time, deadlines, schedules, things like that, they put in their bench player, and it will come off as a little bit uncomfortable to themselves and others, because they often have to go into fight or flight or freeze to pull that out of themselves. And over time, they start seeing that their back turns into concrete, their joints are really tight, they're often feeling stressed, or maybe even have hypoglycemia because they're messing with their blood sugar, and they just don't feel themselves. They don't realize it's because they're a wave trying to make it in a point job or a point environment. And it's not that they can't thrive. They just don't realize they're going into fight or flight so much that they're hurting their bodies doing that. So when these waves discover they're not actually points, they're not actually conscientious, but they're pseudo-conscientious, they're forcing themselves to do it, it does wonders for them. So how I flesh it out to help them see is, like, I can see their facial structure, their body type, their movement, and all these different things. But then to help them see, I take away context, because the context is demanding them to be more conscientious, to have deadlines, to get things done, be exact and precise. They are behaving as such. However, if I strip context away and I say, you've just won the lottery, you don't have any responsibilities, they're going to ditch their conscientiousness, their more linear approach. And so it's just because of the context that they're behaving that way. And that's another reason why they mistype themselves on personality tests, because most people have either a job or a career, or they're working towards something. Because if you even are stay-at-home parent, you're still working hard and you're getting stuff done. And so those contexts make it so you think that you're more conscientious, more linear, getting things done. But the reality is I strip that context away, and that person is going to be more casual. They're going to want to let things play out. They're not going to be as objective, tough-minded, and conscientious.
Yeah, so that's so interesting. And I am sure my husband is pointy because he is very direct. And it's so funny, I didn't think about that before, but that's probably one of the reasons why, you know, we get along so well. And, you know, not some stuff he says, sometimes it's so direct and it's like, okay, fine. That's crazy. So, you know, I help people find more purpose. You know, that's my passion, is helping people really find out why they're here and how they can use that purpose to find the work that they're meant to do. I'm curious with you, because I think sometimes people, being somebody who's over middle-aged, past middle age now, I kind of figured this out late in life. And I was somebody who, I think, probably used my bench too much. And when I did my typing, I found out that I'm actually a very creative person. And I swear, I told myself for years, I'm not creative. I'm not a creative person, because I suppressed that part of me. And the work I do now, I realize I am super creative. If I allow myself to be, if I let myself ideate, which I love to do now. And so I'm curious, because some people find purpose early, and some people, is it because the people who haven't really found it, because I always say the word suppress, but it sounds like what I did most of my life, I wasn't self-actualized, I think is what you call it. I was just trying to use my bench players to do jobs that I was good at, but wasn't necessarily what I was supposed to be doing.
So if you find out that you are actually a creative type, like I was saying, a layered nonlinear rather than the business person fully, and you've been suppressing it, chances are you atrophied those all-stars and you're just bringing them back. Because a lot of times, because as I said, as a result of context or situations or needs that need to be met, people will behave in whatever ways they feel they need to behave. So if people are like, well, I want to be an artist, but I've heard of the term starving artist. So because I've never heard of starving accountant, I'm going to become an accountant. And they worry so much about money and taking care of base needs, primal needs, that they take care of that need of certainty more than they do their need for authenticity. And this happens a lot.
I did that. Yeah, definitely.
Exactly. And so what I say is that for people who are in a job and they don't love it, which is a lot of people, it's not that you have to like quit your job and just start living the way that you'd want. There has to be a transition. It has to be a transitory sort of situation where you're going to find out who it is you really are, your default settings, which are your all-stars. So you can really know what are your strengths, what could really take you to the next level, and then totally be honest with yourself. So the first stage that most people are in is self-deception. They're just unaware of a lot of things. They're putting on airs. They're trying to be something that they're not. They've fooled themselves. And you mentioned it earlier, but I call that a personality mask, because you want to show the world what you think it wants to see. And a lot of people do this because, just think about social media and how curated it is. People make sure they put their best photos. They Photoshop things. There's all these apps to make it so that people look a certain way. So, I mean, Facebook, Instagram, all these things are actually our personality masked. But really,
and sometimes it's not even intentional, right? It's like just wanting to fit in and it's like be accepted and that kind of thing.
Got it. But who we really are is based upon our search engine. So like, or what we put in the search engine, I should say. So when we type in something on, you know, one of the many search engines, that's who we really are. And there's
an interesting curiosity. That's tied to curiosity, right?
Yeah. And people will often search what they really want to talk about or think about or do. And so that really is the authentic version of themselves. It doesn't mean it's always their best self. And I don't say that just because you want it, feel it, or that you desire it, that you should have it and that you should keep doing it. But you have to get out of that state of self-deception where you're trying to fool people, trying to say that you are such an extrovert when in reality you're an introvert or you're possibly an inhibited extrovert.
Some people who are listening might relate to this. Is that I remember when we were on our call, there was a woman there, and it was funny because I brought it up because I was just curious about, I have a cousin and she was given up at birth, and she found my aunt like 30 years later. And I remember her saying that she always felt weird. The example that just made me think about this was, she was sitting at the dinner table with her biological mother, who she was just getting to know. And she said, "I finally felt like somebody got my jokes. I always felt sitting at my dinner table that my parents didn't get me. My adopted parents didn't get me." And so I was just curious in the typing session, I asked you about that. And one of the women in the typing session, she said, "I'm adopted." And it was like, so she was like trying, and like, that's why I was saying it's kind of unintentional sometimes, because you're trying to be like the adoptive parents and that's not who you're meant to be innately. So I thought that was fascinating.
Oh, totally. I remember talking to my parents and I kind of committed to getting into the business program and was focusing on that. It's not that I couldn't have done that, but it was just something that felt off. I felt like it didn't fully fit who I was. That was a really formative time of my life. I was dating, and from the women that I was dating, they would say, "Oh, you analyze things too much." I was like, "Really? I think you might analyze things too little." You know, so my brain really is always reading people and figuring things out. So curious that it kind of ruined my dating life. I was looking for someone who understood me, that really kind of got who I was, how I operated, and then would love me for it. But when I was my natural self, I didn't have as many potential women who I could possibly be with that really were on board. So I was like, something is going on here. And so I had to figure out why I was different. So that was one of the reasons why. Also, I'm different from different people in my family and others that I know. And so I was really trying to discover what it was that made me who I am, meaning like what makes me tick? Why am I motivated by some things over others? What are my strengths and weaknesses? And
yeah, it's so interesting because you were so self-aware and we're listening and following that whatever gut instinct. Whereas, you know, I knew I was the same. I mean, I was taking these classes that I hated. I was just like crazy about this boy. And all I wanted to do was just like love him, right? Forget school. And so I just continued. I didn't like, even though I knew something was off, I didn't do anything about it. So good credit to you and kudos that you followed your that kind of like instinct.
Yeah. And it almost didn't happen because I chanced upon it. You know, the whole personality things. I had a friend of mine that just brought different personality books to me and was like, "Hey, let's take these." And that's really what started the journey, is when this person in college introduced me to it. And then I was like, "This is crazy. I want to know more about this." And that's when I started getting into Carl Jung and understanding the MBTI, the Kiersey Sorter, just all sorts of things like the Enneagram, DISC, everything I could get my hands on. I wanted to understand all these systems. And I realized that they all came from this understanding of duality. And almost always when you take a self-assessment quiz or test, it's going to ask you an either or. So it has to do with a binary or a duality or two things. Mm-hmm. Are you more this or that? And that really opened my mind, and my mind started reeling. And I was like, there is something fundamental about this that's related to really the laws of nature and the laws of human nature. And this could really help me. So I became really enamored with everything, like I said, personality, temperament, and things like that. And so my desire was to get rid of all deception in my life. I wanted to live so authentically that I wasn't play acting, I wasn't being a phony, I was being sincere in my speech, my actions with people. And so when I finally met my wife, I had actually become so good at reading people that I knew instantaneously what her inborn personality was, and I knew we could get along.
And that's crazy, because you know, I would imagine that through that process too, you're also able to eliminate people who are self-deceptive. So you're becoming your most authentic self, but you're also able to find the most authentic people.
You got it. So it's interesting, but that's how it works with our solar system. The sun has planets revolving around it because of its gravitational pull. And so as you develop yourself, you become very authentic. You don't want to live a lie. You want to be who you're meant to be. It creates a gravitational pull, a magnetism or a force that causes people to get into your orbit. And so people get pulled into my orbit. I get pulled into their orbit based upon that authenticity. So it's just like my favorite thing in the world to be able to experience things like this. And so I'm like very grateful that I get to be on your podcast, because you're one of those individuals. You found that authenticity about yourself. And it's just like, it's like, as I say, like a synapse between two people. It's just like,
Yeah, I'm so glad you came in my orbit. I was just going to say, yeah, Alex just orbit around in July, and here he is. So that's so crazy. So you also, you were talking about self deception, and then aren't there three stages?
Three stages.
Okay.
Approach, and it kind of follows the humanistic approach. So there's self-deception, which means, of course, you don't know what you are most of the time versus some of the time, or else you're deceived, you're wearing that personality mask or multiple personality masks. Then you make your way to self-actualization. And if you read about Abraham Maslow, he talks about self-actualization. And in humanistic psychology, you'll see that they talk about you becoming who you're supposed to be. And Carl Jung, he calls that individuation. And individuation is becoming an individual. You're separating yourself from the other, and you're becoming what you are with your inborn or personality. The next stage is to really overcome those natural tendencies of yourself that are not serving you well. And you rise to a higher level, and you become your higher self, which is self-transcendence. So to me, that's the ultimate goal. Some people, they just want to be authentic and say, I got to be me. And they'll sometimes be selfish and say, well, this is just who I am. You know, I don't think that should be the end goal, but some people are that way because it feels right. But everybody who is self-transcendent, they have a degree of comfort and discomfort. It's the duality that's there, because when you put yourself in comfortable situations all the time, you don't really have growth. You don't really get anywhere. It's just you're kind of sitting around and enjoying life in the lap of luxury, which is fine sometimes, but it's really those moments of discomfort, those moments where there's growth, where you have something that's hard. Because when you're failing, or you're feeling pain, or you feel like you have loss, those are the times really that you grow. It's not in having the creature comforts, just, you know, living it up. It's in those moments where you don't have the answer, where you feel stretched, And so it's important that you have what I call optimal difficulty. You don't want to be stretched too hard where you could break or be really hurt mentally and physically, but you want to have optimal difficulty, which Lev Vygotsky says is the zone of proximal development. So you just stretch yourself so that you can become your best self incrementally. And Tony Robbins talks about this kind of incremental growth that happens over time. And James Clear, who wrote The Atomic Habits, it's just like this getting better by 1% or in small percentages, and then you create this exponential curve and then you get where you want to go. So I've noticed that in myself, where when you get to the point of liftoff or takeoff, it's just like an airplane. When you get enough inertia, then you take off and you feel like you're getting where you want to go.
Yeah, I think one of the things that held me back for a lot of my life is that I was raised by atheists. And so they had, and it wasn't, they almost became that because of my, I have an aunt and she was really a, kind of a religious zealot. And so she caused some, like a family fallout. And of course this, I'm a small child, right? So I'm kind of witnessing this from my parents' lens. And so I was always very, I wasn't open to learning anything that was associated with religion, which equaled spirituality to me.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't until I really got curious more about eternal life. You know, I read a book a couple of years ago that was like, wow, it was really powerful about people that have been put under hypnosis and talked about what happened between their lives. You know, they came back, you know, their souls, you know, were, you know, in this human form, and then they went away and they came back in another human form. It was like, you know, I've always been open and curious. And so for me, I think it's interesting, and I would be interested in your perspective, but about like how we're just the human form is kind of a temporary thing, and we have this human experience, but it's so much more than the human experience. It's like there's something more there, and a lot of us walk around just like in this human experience, and we don't quest for more. We don't dig any deeper and aren't curious about what is this world we live in? And you know, I'm starting to learn more about quantum physics and like how we are energy and how we're subatomic particles and all this stuff. It's like so fascinating to me, but for most of my life, and you know, how I was exposed to that spiritual anything was bad, kind of, I think, held me back from getting to where I am today. I'm thankful I'm here and that I'm open and learning, but I'd be interested to hear kind of what you think about that whole, like, there's more out there than just our bodies.
There's definitely more out there. And one term that kind of describes it is the numinous. If you look that up, it's like things that you can't fully explain, but yet have some effect on us. It's phenomena that we can't really grasp, but we feel it, we sense it. We have extrasensory perception, just all sorts of stuff. And so for me, spirituality is extremely important, and discovered that, of course, my mind affects my brain and my body, and however it works in regards to how those things are connected, I know that they are connected, and you know, the mind, body, spirit, whole connection and things like that. And so for me, understanding your inborn personality, it is actually a spiritual journey. And that's why in the end it's self-transcendence, or some people call enlightenment. You know, it's kind of a word that gets overused these days. And a lot of times people are, you know, they'll say hashtag woke, you know. So a lot of people who are woke, it's really, that's what it is. Because the three stages are really you're asleep, and that's self-deception. You're waking up, that's self-actualization, and then you've woken up, and that's self-transcendence. So when you really see things for what they really are, you understand the patterns of nature and human nature, you start to see simple to complex patterns that work in your life, and you look for things that are functional, things that work, the things that are balanced, things that are sustainable, then you really are doing something spiritual. Because what I say is that you're not just meant to use your all-stars, you know, your major traits, just your strengths. You're supposed to be a good coach. And I found that good coaches actually have a spirituality to them. They really care about transformative experiences. They care about growth. They want to take people from low states to high states, to get from where they are to where they want to be. And so you have to actually unite the dualities. And that is that instead of being like merciful all the time, you have to balance it out with justice. Instead of just always being non-linear and flying by the seat of your pants, you have to learn to be linear, right? And if you're a wave, you can't just get away with meandering and wandering. You'd have to find ways to use your point. So when you use the two together in harmony and you unite them, which means that you integrate them, it creates wholeness. So to me, spirituality is wholeness. Carl Jung, he talks about integrating your shadow. And that is, as you make it part of yourself and you make it part of your story. Once you integrate trauma and your shadow, it becomes part of your story that helps other people to a higher level, because instead of using that as an excuse or a crutch for why you didn't succeed or why you didn't make things happen, you use it as something that's part of your story that helps other people. It ignites their passions. It gets them excited. It gets them pumped to be able to live their own lives. And so once people own that shadow side of their self, the side of themselves they don't want to share with people, the things that they're either embarrassed of or that they don't want people to know about, and they own it, they become whole. So to me, wholeness, it fits with actually what the word peace is supposed to be. It comes from ancient Hebrew word shalom, and that's just not an absence of war or a warm, fuzzy, peaceful feeling. What it actually means is completeness or wholeness. And so being someone who is all about peace, it's not just trying to be someone who doesn't start battles or wars or things like that. It's actually a complete person. We're trying to help other people become complete or whole. So that's where you're going to learn to be what I call contextually correct. If you are leaning on the side of mercy and you usually want to say yes, you learn how to say no and do some assertiveness training, you become whole instead of just allowing people to push you around. If you're highly sensitive, it doesn't mean you have to like toughen up and be too hard, because people who are highly sensitive are like the heart and the body of society. They're not supposed to be like the bones. The bones are supposed to be hard, but the heart isn't supposed to be hard. It's supposed to be soft. So they have to remain soft, but they do have to be strong. So you need a strong heart, okay? And so when people are able to use both sides of the dualities and become contextually correct, which means doing the right thing for the right duration, the right time for the right reason, then that creates wholeness and that's sustainable.
So interesting. So it's almost like just it's good intention, right? It's being doing things for the right reasons, and I guess always listening to your heart. So, well, this has been fascinating. I always like to spend time with you. So I was so excited for you to come on here and just have an open conversation. So my audience, most of the people who listen to me are people at midlife and are open for all kinds of things, because I talk about all kinds of things, but I always like to inspire them to follow what they're passionate about, to if they are still searching for a larger purpose, a deeper meaning in life. I hope that through my guests that they find more answers. And so you are one person that I feel like they can immediately take action after they listen to this and find out more about themselves, to learn more about, you know, whether they're living with a mask and really understand more about their all-stars, as you would call them, and how to use those in the world. And I think for me, I feel like, why wait? Don't keep trying to figure it out on your own. And so I know that you can go, this is what I did. I listened to Alex. I went to his website, innershift.com, and you can sign up there for a session, a typing session. And it's really affordable. I was like shocked. I was like, I'll pay anything. That's kind of how I felt. And I was, you know, for what you get from that session, it's amazing. It's so eye-opening. And like I said, I did one with my students, and I'm going to make that, you know, like a bonus going forward when I open enrollment, because I just think it's such an amazing experience. And I watched some real transformations happen in the short period of time that we did that. So Alex, what would you say to my listener in terms of what they can do other than going to your website and signing up to get typed? What's something, just like something that you'd like to leave them with that you think could inspire them in some way?
Yeah. So everybody who's listening, the first step is courage. You have to be brave to decide that you want to be who you're meant to be. Now that, of course, has subjectivity to it, you know, what you're meant to be, but really it's the higher self. So I believe everybody should become their higher self. So if you want to get out of states that are lower, which means the states of deception, where you're tricking yourself, you're fooling yourself, you're wearing a mask, but you're afraid to take it off because you're like, well, I don't know if people will like me for who I am. The first stage, like I said, or step is to have that courage, that bravery. And then—
And how does that show up? Like, how does that show up as like that there's this inner knowing that something doesn't feel right, that like that they're angry a lot, that they're just feeling kind of disconnected in some way? I remember for me, I just felt like there's something more. There's just like, I should be happy, but I'm not feeling happy. That's how it kind of showed up for me.
That's it. So what I say is that when you feel like you're lost, or you feel like you're not yourself, or that you're like, I can't take any more of this, I'm at wit's end, you hit a wall, those are all signs that you're ready for something different. And you have that choice to just keep going and to push on through, which I don't necessarily recommend, but most people do that, or decide to make an inner shift. Something that happens, it clicks in your mind and you go, I don't need to do this anymore. So I tell people, you end up with what you're willing to put up with. So if you're willing to put up with stuff in your life that doesn't fit you and it doesn't make you feel good, or that you don't feel like you're fulfilled, we can help you to make some changes. And so I would love to work with you. I had a great time working with Laurie's team, and I just have a fantastic time helping people to get to where they need to go. And that is fulfillment, more joy, just having your goals and your dreams kind of realized.
Yeah, it was almost like you read this. It's like you opened this secret box that had exactly who these people were, and that as soon as you read from it, they were like, oh, you're so right. It's like, it must feel so great to be able to help people transform like that.
Oh, I love it. I love what I do. And as you can tell, I'm very passionate about it. And I just really want people to be able to get what they want out of life and have life that will leave a legacy, will make them feel proud about what they've done. Because a lot of people, they'll have these regrets. And a lot of people who are on their deathbed, they have these regrets that they never really took that chance to do the thing that they really wanted to do. And so I help people, no matter what age they are, to make that shift, to change, to be able to have a way to become who they're meant to be. So sometimes it's not easy. It takes some changes. It takes some pain. But in the end, you'll be so happy. And I did that for myself. And if I hadn't shown that it's possible for myself, I would feel like I wasn't really someone who was qualified. But because I did it for myself, I took that chance. I bet on myself. I had that fierce belief in myself. And I said, I'm going to figure out who I am, what I'm supposed to do, and how I can make the most impact. And you can do the same.
Yeah. And I did that at age 47. It just took me a little bit longer than you. I don't know if I told you this, but I had actually a vision of me being in, like, at the end of my life and feeling like I screwed it up. Like I didn't do what I was supposed to do. And so that is when I got brave enough to change and to start doing something about it. And even then it took a while to figure it out, but at least I started. And I just, you know, for me, it's the word settling. And I just don't want people to settle. I want them to go after it. And so we're a lot alike in that. So thanks so much. And it's been a pleasure. I'm so glad we got the tech worked out finally. And awesome. Yeah, we'll talk soon.
Thank you so much for tuning into the Not Your Average Lives podcast. If you haven't yet, make sure to subscribe on iTunes if you have an Apple device. You can find free resources and learn what else I have going on at the moment that might interest you on my website at notyouraveragegrandma.com. You can also find me on Instagram or Facebook at notyouraveragegrandma. If you liked this episode, it would make my heart so happy if you could leave me a 5-star rating. You can also add a review to let me know what you like about this podcast, which will help spread the word about it to others who need a little midlife inspiration. As always, be you, listen to your inner voice, and focus on reigniting that lost spark so you can start living your own, not your average, life.